So it was a pragmatic advice to be a leader. I believe in being a student of my calendar.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
So I'm gonna talk about leadership, mentorship, and networking. And I'm gonna fly through this, so slow me down if you can't hang. So I'll first talk about what I think are the five rules, disciplines of how to be a great leader. And the first is to know your values. And there's four types of values that you have. There's personal values. That could be your integrity, your love, character, whatever is personal to you within your own being. And then there's experiential values, which are really important today because most younger people value their experiences much more than how I was raised. They'll outweigh an experience over many other things in their life, which is fine. Giving values, which to me are about building a legacy. Yeah, coming from a sports background, I call it, you know, there's the legacy, your name on your back. That's what people remember. And then receiving values, which are to me the same as giving, in the respect that not the legacy of giving, but I believe that to receive is to give, that I make room for things in my life so I can give more and give more. So I really view when I receive the excitement and empowerment and purpose that the more I receive, the more I can do. And the more that I give is just making room so I can receive more, so I can give more. And it's just a complete flow for me. So understanding those values as a leader are the most important thing. In fact, this business is truly just based on teaching people value. We teach four values here. It's gratitude, number one, which I think is the most important thing that you can take away from here. It's a simple perspective. It's one that we forget all the time. It's a lesson that we forget all the time. You're going to learn a lot of lessons in your life, and you're going to forget every single one of them every day. But you have the ability to remember them at any time. And gratitude's one that I constantly try to remind myself. It's the only thing I've been blessed to be around some big world thought leaders and huge CEOs and owners of teams and unbelievable athletes. And that right there is the secret sauce that everybody forgets about. It makes your past unbelievable, your present brighter, and your future even brighter than that. It solves so much when you can truly practice gratitude. I always tell people, you want to change your life, say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. Do it for 30 straight days, it'll become part of your subconscious, a neural pathway, a habit, a discipline. If you continue to access gratitude in that manner, it'll affect your unconscious competency, your DNA, your actual chromosome and epigenetic level of frequency that you'll carry. You'll start attracting more and more of the higher frequency of one of the greatest truths of gratitude. So that's the first value for me. The next one's empathy, or for me, forgiveness. Empathy is not sympathy. You can't feel bad enough for someone to make them feel good, right? You guys know from your foundation, you cannot feel bad enough. You cannot be sick enough to make someone well. You certainly can't be poor enough to make someone rich. Empathy is much more powerful. Forgiveness is, to me, one of the keys to life. But if you believe, like I do, that you're always connected to the most powerful source of energy and light and love and truth, and that truly forgiveness allows us to clear the interference or the corrosion that we feel when we're not inspired. You know, I believe that I'm always inspired. Someone asked me today, because I think I left at like 3 this morning or whatever up in LA and all this stuff. I'm like, oh, you tired now? I said, no, I'm never tired. I just may have to clear a corrosion or interference with what I'm connected to. Physically, I can get exhausted, right? My body will give out on me, but my spirit will never. My spirit won't, because even when I'm sleeping, you know, I'm constantly in a forgiving state because I know that I'm going to forget the lessons that I learned, the really simple lessons that I've learned. I'm going to forget every day to smile at someone, to not take myself so seriously, to be thankful, to not pick up a piece of trash. You know, there's just a ton of things I forget every day that make my life better. The next one is accountability. Very important as a leader. For me, two questions to ask. What did I do to attract this to myself? And most importantly, what am I supposed to learn from it? I don't believe in mistakes. I honestly don't. I believe in lessons, and that if we can continue to learn the lessons and practice learning the lessons, that we'll expand, allowing ourselves to have more room for what? To receive more, to give more, to create a greater flow, a greater impact, more good and feel better. Right? The ultimate goal in life is everybody here, somewhere between, you know, 80 and 120 years, you're going to experience this lifetime. And it's really about how much good you can do. It's that simple. That'll make you feel better, but you'll have a greater impact. And your experience here for those 80 to 100 years, 20 years, will be a positive one. Those are the three things. The last thing kind of got into is inspiration. I call it effective communication. In spirit is to connect. So I call it effective communication, connecting not only to each other, but I can only give you what I don't have. That's why forgiveness to me is so important. If I can forgive myself, I can give it to you. If I don't forgive myself, I can't give you forgiveness. So many people can't forgive other people because they're too busy passing judgments and conditions, projecting their own insecurity of what they don't like about themselves. In our younger years, it was classic. I mean, I hated my father for every single reason. I hated myself. My dad was a liar. He's a manipulator, a cheater, overseller, back-end seller, and I hated him for it. And then, you know, as I got into my 30s as a multimillionaire, I realized, gosh, sure do hate him for a good reason, because I don't like myself. So I started forgiving myself and making the changes not to be that way, to provide value and to be of service and to be productive and accessible and to understand the energy of money and how to deal with that. So to be a leader, those are the four things that I have come up with through my values. The second thing to be a leader is to understand time. So as a pragmatic advice to be a leader, I believe in being a student of my calendar. I believe that I live in a lens of productivity and accessibility. I don't believe in work. I believe in activity I get paid for and activity I don't get paid for. I don't believe in any activity. I take the time to learn to love every activity. I challenged, today I was with Mark Brazil, and he said something. I said, dude, my whole life, I've learned to practice taking a moment, and no matter what activity it is, I would rather take the time to think about how can I love doing this than to just do it and not, to create corrosion or interference to the inspiration that I'm connected to. So for me, I study my calendar every day, at least twice a day. I study it. All the activity I do in person, on the phone, via email, media, radio, print, TV, social media, I study it with a lens of productivity and accessibility. How productive am I? How much value am I providing? And how accessible am I to others? And how am I accessing what I want to fill that void, to give away, to make more room and expand even more? I also study the white space in my calendar. I think people make horrific mistakes most time. The biggest void, shortages, and obstacles are caused because we're not paying attention to the free time. We're allowing time to pass with no productivity and accessibility, just wasting time. I don't believe in any waste of my time. I'm trying to statistically be one of the most productive and accessible people with the time that I have planned, activity that I get paid for and not paid for, and also that activity that is white space in my calendar, which leads to another thing that I do things now. Because of time and the efficiencies of time, I ask myself if there's things to do, can I do it now? If I can do it now, I do it. Why? Because it takes me at least twice as much time if I don't do it now, and I become statistically and exponentially less successful by putting things off. If I can't do something now, I have a do it now repository or folder, and then I schedule in my calendar to look at the do it now folder, prioritizing by what's the most important first, and then looking at what's urgent. If something's important, you do it, not urgent. Most of the things that are unimportant but urgent, I delegate to other people, and things that are unimportant and not urgent, I forget about. It's a waste of time. Then the next part of that too is to understand, you know, your own prioritization. So routines and disciplines are created through the continuum of the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious mind. We want to effectuate all of those, what we think, say, do, believe, and this unconscious competency that creates your personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions. So we have to understand how we're utilizing that time efficiently, effectively, statistically successful. And through that continuum, it takes practice. So I think it's really important for people to know how the body, mind, and soul works as a leader. It's repetition. That's why I tell you to say thank you for 30 straight days. What happens is that our cellular memory, or our cells, have a memory, and it only works when our eyes are open, and when our eyes close, it turns off. So it's a really stupid short memory. That's why we forget so many different things. In order to remember something, you get about 10,000 inputs a day, 10,000 thoughts, data points, and you receive those through your senses, the way you see, smell, touch, hear, and all of those have interference, right? Our own perceptions interfere with that. So it's not a really stable data type of thing when we're inputting our data. That's why perspective is so important. We can all experience things differently. You could say, I love that, or I hated that. I prefer you start telling yourself the 10,000 data points I've learned to love, because we found the lessons in it, we found the light in it, we found whatever you want to find in it. But if you're able to get the same input for a minimum of 21 days, depending on your genetics, that quantum memory in the unconscious, but a minimum of 21 days, that then goes to your subconscious. And what lies in your subconscious is 40,000 of the same thoughts. The same exact thoughts that are just running around in your head. That's why it's so important to control what we're inputting, because those 40,000 thoughts are what creates the neural pathways, the disciplines, the habits in your brain. That's this subconscious thing. It also is what's generated with the biggest habit that everyone on earth has. You know the number one habit that everyone has on earth? Spend the most time? Sleep. On average, most people have a habit of sleeping 8 hours a day. Any of you practice sleep? Have you studied sleep? Do you have a mentor for sleep? I do. It's the last mentor I'll give up. I study sleep because I know that my sleep only deals with my subconscious and unconscious mind. I can work on making sure the 40,000 of those thoughts that I have in my subconscious are generating that flow and connecting and clearing the connection and all the different things that I want to happen. But most importantly, it's training my unconscious, which consists of my DNA, my chromosomes, my epigenetic layer. My DNA holds medically proven 4 generations of information. Great-grandparents, grandparents, parents, and me. It holds that. I'm a freak. I believe it holds lifetimes of information, like multiple lifetimes. So it gets really confusing. But I believe that there is a code, there is a frequency, a quantum memory that's so deep. Cellular memory, stupid. Subconscious memory, intermediate, pretty good, as long as you access it. So if you practice Spanish, for example, and you input and practice Spanish, pretty soon you'll become fluent. It'll go into your subconscious. If you stop speaking Spanish, you'll forget it. Even though it's in your subconscious, eventually it'll get worse and worse and worse. But if your family for generations grew up in Spain, even though you live in America and you're 2 years old, you can pick up Spanish like that. It's quantum. It's been nailed in that daily access for years and years and years. So we want to understand that continuum so that we're putting our energy and our data in the right things, which leads to the next. So that's, to me, if you have the right values, you do things now, you're a student in your calendar. Also, the last thing to practice, you know, all of this is practice, is practice ending fear. How do we practice ending fear? Know what's in the ego-based consciousness. I'm consistently, it's a 3-step process for me. Number one, be aware of what I'm afraid of, the need to be right, the need to be offended, the need to be separate, inferior, superior, frustrated, anxious, fearful, resentful, you know, a variety of different things. The more I practice knowing when I'm thinking this way, then I can practice stopping. Right? That's the second step for me. I practice saying, oh, I'm afraid, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm offended, I need to be right, and all the things that waste my energy. Now I have to practice stopping. And I make that a whole second step. Then I practice moving in the right trajectory. As a leader, it's really, really important to get the continuum right. But if you know your values, study your calendar, do it now. Practice ending fear, you'll be a great leader by example, by energy. The quantum memory that you have, that frequency, it has a strength of a signal, spectrum of a signal, how wide it spreads, and a clarity of a message that you are unaware of. That's why some people think, say, and do all the right things, they even believe the right things, but the same shit keeps coming up in their life again and again and again, the exact same way. You keep attracting, but it's a beacon. You can't help it. It's the most powerful source. So I focus in on not necessarily the outward side of, you know, like the visionary of, you know, the laws of attraction, that if, oh, I think what I want, I'm going to get exactly that. I actually believe it's a little more contrived, that if I think, say, do, and believe, it's moving this way within me through the continuum to my unconscious competency. And if I make a strong enough signal and a wide enough spectrum and a clear enough message with that signal, that's what attracts. So it has a little less direct effect, makes more sense within the time frame and the vibration that we live in. Secondly, mentorship. To me, mentorship's simple. Mentorship is finding the people that sit in the situation that you want to be in. It's that simple. You have the power to ask for help, which will lead into the networking side of things, but mentorship is crucial in my life. And the times I spend as much time thinking about, you know, when I wrote my first book, Napoleon Hill wrote a book called Think and Grow Rich. It's one of my favorite books of all time. I went to the Napoleon Hill Foundation before I wrote my book. I brought my outline with me and I said, I want to write a book like Think and Grow Rich. Will you help me? Because that's the situation I wanted to be in. And guess what they said? Sure. Right, when I wanted my relationship with money, very first time I ever got to meet Steve Wynn, I said, can you do me a favor, Mr. Wynn? Sure. Will you mentor me on your relationship with money? He goes, what does that mean? I go, I'll be very concise. I'll call you once in a while to ask you in a business situation what you would do to figure out your relationship with money. If you give me your cell phone or email address, I'll not be intrusive. I'll be very concise and respectful, but I'd love to have that opportunity to learn from you. And he said, yeah, sure. Here's my cell phone. You know, people don't ask for mentorship. It's the easiest way to learn, right? Look at any of the great athletes. They had a great coach. It's just learning on their own. The acceleration that occurs through mentorship is extraordinary. And it's not a matter of being lazy, of having somebody, you're just accelerating your learning curve past, and you still can achieve more. And you can have more. I have a minimum of 3 mentors at all time in my life. Like I said, one of the mentors I don't get rid of is my sleep mentor. So there's this woman named Dr. Meeta Singh, who's the NFL sleep coach. She was the national sleep coach for the Washington Nationals. They won all 4 of their games on the road for the first time ever. She feels she had a great contribution to the team because they slept well on the road with all the stress, etc. So I travel 200 days a year. I'm very aware that my subconscious and unconscious is developing a frequency while I'm sleeping, and I want to be at the right temperature, the right eating habits, the right lighting habits, the right firmness of my mattress, the cool of the sheet, all types of different things. And I also want to have that adaptable. One thing also that I got from mentorship, but also to be a leader, routines, right? If we're looking within the continuum of the conscious and subconscious mind, routines are very important, right? Because we want consistent, persistent behavior. In fact, my life, or my definition of happiness, is the enjoyment of the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of my potential, my truth. It's very simple. So in order to effectuate that, I need to have a routine to be consistent. But I believe that everyone should have 2 routines. I have my, what I call home routine, which I'm on kind of right now. I broke it a tiny bit, but I'm at home sleeping in my own bed. Not too much changed other than a little extra speaking engagement here. But otherwise, I wake up at the same time, I meditate at the same time, I go to the gym at the same time, I eat at the same time, I have my coaching calls at the same time, I'm at the office at the same time. I normally leave the office and do my coaching calls, and I take 5:30 to 7:30 at the same time. You should also have an adaptable routine. Adaptable routines are based off of your values. So I prioritize my health first. I changed that. It used to be family first, business second, and health third. What I realized was the minute that you put your family or work in front of anything, you'll never get to the third thing. So I became very unhealthy in thinking I was healthy. But so I do a minimum amount of time to my priorities when I'm in an adaptable routine. minimum of an hour a day for my health, minimum 30 minutes a day for my wife, a minimum 30 minutes a day for my 9-year-old, minimum 2 minutes a day for my 3 teenage daughters. I asked for 5, I'm not a bad dad. They only gave me 2. Minimum of 1 minute a day for my mom. I am a bad son, but that's all I could take. But it makes a big difference. 2 minutes a day, 1 minute a day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday. Trust me, the consistent behavior is exponential. So base your adaptable routine off of the priorities of your life, health, family. Then I go to student in the calendar, right? Minimum amount of 15 minutes a day on the student in the calendar, and I move from there. Moving to the last topic as we get to the thing, to the end. So we have leadership, mentorship, and networking. But networking is the key to life. It's that effective communication, connecting, especially in the charitable side, the philanthropic side of things. This is how I see networking. It's really easy. There's 4 ways to network. 1 in person, 1 on the phone, 1 via email, and 1 via media. Radio, print, TV, social media. That's how you network. There's 2 things you need to know about networking. 1, the best way to network is know and make an emotional connection first. You make an emotional connection by having credibility and then finding out what somebody likes or doesn't like or where you can provide value. That's going to create an emotional connection. People buy on emotion for logical reasons. So don't dump features and benefits on people. Don't sell yourself to anyone. It's very simple to me. In order to get credibility, we need to ask open-ended questions of others to learn about them, to be more interested than interesting, and then ask them closed-ended questions to lead them to the value that you can provide. You can, if you're in a short amount of time in networking, simply ask someone, is there anything I can do for you? How can I be of service? Can I provide any value to you? Is there anything, right? You can ask them, oh my gosh, you know, I really like that shirt. But you have to connect someone, but you have to ask, improve or offer or ask enough questions to get to how can I be of service. Everyone can do something for someone to be of value and to be of service. Now, the second thing in networking, in person, on the phone, via email, and media, is the one and most powerful thing that most people do. I live by 2 words, radical humility. I used to think radical humility was how much I could give to other people. We talked earlier about the receiving value is giving and receiving are one. I make room in my life so I can receive more, to give more, and make even more room to receive more and give more. If you're gonna write down anything, the magic question of networking is, do you know anyone that can help me? Do you know anyone that can help me? I work for a great foundation, NAGU. We help children with cancer, right? Do you know anyone that can help me? Now, the greatest thing about that question, it's taken me years in the subtleties of the words, is it includes you. The first person you're thinking of when I said, do you know who can help me? I'm looking for a babysitter. You immediately think in your head, can I help him? And then you'll move on, do I have a little sister? Right, or my cousin's 16 and she needs some cash, or whatever it is. This is how the brain works, and you feel good about yourself. And you got to realize when you're asking people for help, you're giving them an opportunity to feel good. You're giving them a gift. You know, I raise a ton of money for charities. I am the chief chancellor of Junior Achievement University. It's the 7th largest NGO in the world. I am the chairman of Unstoppable Foundation. I work with Boys and Girls Club, St. Jude, sit on the board of advisors with them. Not just millions, but literally billions of dollars. And people are like, how do you, I sit on the board of the Rose Bowl. We raise millions of dollars for the Rose Bowl. How do you do it? I literally am relentless about asking people, do you know anybody that can help me? Oh, you went to a Pac-10 school? Do you know who can help me? I'm trying to get the Warren Moon Tunnel funded. Really? I love Warren Moon. Really? Let me send you a packet. All day long. I check my sent box of my emails every night to see how many emails ask for help. It's easy for me to offer help. It's just innate in my being to look and see how I can be of service, or at least let people know I'm of service. But you have to ask. Einstein said nothing happens till it moves. Nothing moves till you ask. Nothing's gonna move till you ask. I had a famous football player that worked for me three different times. He was a liability and a pain in my ass, but literally, I loved him because he always would say, Dave, you don't get unless you ask. You're right, especially in this business, especially for people that you love or people you care about or a cause or a purpose. For you, ask. Nothing bad will happen. Worst thing that happens is someone says no, and I always say the greatest thing about no is I'm one less no away from what I want. You know, if you're sick of getting no, just tell yourself, what if I was 25 no's from getting a yes? How excited would I be at one no, 10 no's, 20 no's? How excited would I be on the 24th no? Most people can't keep that perspective or frame it in that manner. I can. I can stay excited knowing that every no that I get, I'm just that much closer to what I want, which is to help other people and provide value. But I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.